Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at AssemblyCall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit InsideTheHall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall Premium Forum.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Matchup. I'm Ben Ladner, joined as always by Seth Tao. We are back after quite a long hiatus. Our podcast was kind of, we were joking before, kind of in peril.
Yeah.
During that 7-game losing streak, it looked like there would not be a matchup worth previewing again for quite some time. But
we were seriously reconsidering the format of our podcast up until that Michigan State game for Indiana.
Yeah.
That not only was a season saving win, but that was a podcast saving win.
You could say our podcast was on the brink.
We all were thinking it, but
someone had to say it.
It's usually me.
I think both of us kind of have a little bit of that gene. Indiana obviously picked up a huge win against Michigan State this Saturday. You and I were both in the building. We were sitting next to one another, kind of up in the right, top right-hand corner if you're watching it on TV. And I got to say, I was telling Jared this on Basketball 201 earlier today. That was one of the most surreal basketball games I think I've ever watched because... obviously everyone kind of knows the circumstance, the stakes, unranked team losing 7 in a row, going into a Michigan State, going into the Breslin Center to play Michigan State, who, in fairness, had lost to Purdue, recently. So Michigan State was not playing their best basketball. But, for IU to be that thin already on their depth and then to lose their best player, 12 right. minutes into the game, it just had all the makings of a disaster. And I suppose because of that, it had all the makings of like this storybook win where the team rallies and everyone's resilient and the best, the star freshman hits the clutch shot and all that kind of thing. But man, it was just an unbelievable win that I during the game, I was kind of just like watching it and taking it. It wasn't until afterward where I was like, wow, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday I was joking with Galen Clavio yesterday and I was doing an on-camera thing in class and doing a mic check for that. And during my mic check, I said, Indiana somehow beat Michigan State. And he's like, you were there. You should know of all people. And I'm like, yeah, but who can explain it? Like, I of course we can and will talk about how it happened, but the why it happened defies logic, really. I mean, you mentioned Juwan Morgan going down, but the way Indiana won this game goes against everything we've seen from this team, even when they're healthy. It goes against what we've seen from this team all season long.
Yeah, it does. And, hopefully they can carry it into this Iowa game, which we'll talk about because, people have said, and I said this, Jared, today, like, this could be the season, the turning point, the season-saving win that turns everything around. But it could also just be a one-game blip where they win this game, and then you look back on it like, oh, well, we still have that, even though the rest of the season kind of went down the drain. I don't know which way it's going to go. I'm not saying that the season will go down the drain necessarily. I'm also not saying that Indiana's going to, win their next 9 games and get a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. We have no idea.
It's interesting because both Indiana and Iowa are coming off of big wins going into this game. It's not just Indiana.
That's what I was going to mention. Iowa just beat Michigan, who was ranked number 5 in the country. Michigan State was number 6. So, Yeah, I mean, both teams are, I think you could say the same thing about both, in that they're both carrying momentum. They both really need some big wins, because as much as Indiana struggled, Iowa hasn't been quite as rough at points, but they're only 6-5 in the Big Ten. All five of their losses on the season have come in Big Ten play. So, and they're only 2-3 on the road. So it's a big game for them as well. And they're kind of, you know, maybe in that same middle ground that Indiana's been in at moments this season. I think Indiana probably sunk below that middle ground before that loss to Michigan State. But yeah, they're in very similar positions. And I think, you know, once we get into the matchups, I think they're kind of similar teams in some senses, but also, you know, the style, I think, is pretty, the difference is pretty stark, because Iowa is a fast, up-tempo, offensive team. They play with a lot of pace, a lot of speed, and they're really efficient. Indiana has been just about the opposite of that at most times this season. And so it's going to be a unique challenge, because I don't think Indiana's seen a team like Iowa that's going to, you know, shoot as many threes, that's going to shoot threes at such a high percentage. Although teams have shot well against Indiana at moments, this is an Iowa team that consistently shoots the ball really well and has a lot of different guys who can fill it up.
Yeah, the team that's most similar that Indiana has seen up until now, that's most similar to Iowa, is Nebraska. And Nebraska is in a much different place now than they were when Indiana played them, and vice versa. Indiana was in the middle of that big losing streak when they played Nebraska, and that was one of their worst performances of the season so far. But, you know, they're similar in that Iowa is right now the worst defensive team in the Big Ten. They give up 1.089 points per possession in conference play, but they're also third in the conference in offensive points per possession.
Right.
So it's going to be another case of Indiana's D is going to have to step up to task like it did against Michigan State. And the offense is going to have to be able to take advantage of some poor defense that could create some opportunities. Now, you know, even though Iowa's ranked that low, they did hold Michigan to nearly 0.8 points per possession in that game. So who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, and you just go off raw numbers. For the whole season, they're 18th in the country in offensive rating at 114.3 points per 100 possessions, which that doesn't account for scheduling, and you know, it isn't weighted. So it does include, you know, Iowa kind of fattened up on cupcakes earlier in the year. But still, I mean, they're a really efficient offensive team, third best offense in the Big Ten as of this recording on Tuesday night around 7:50. So yeah, they're a really efficient offense. And I was going to ask you if there's one kind of, you know, one-on-one, I mean, obviously the game is not played one-on-one, but one kind of individual matchup to look at in this game. What has your interest piqued the most?
What has my interest piqued right now is, I think, Luka Garza inside and how Indiana is going to deal with him, especially if Juwan Morgan's unable to go. We don't know exactly what Juwan Morgan's status is going to be, but I think that'll be a real challenge for Jerron Davis.
Yeah, I think so too. And even for Juwan Morgan too, if he plays, and his health is going to be a really big question, because he's been undersized, you know, playing that undersized center position all season. And he's done well. You know, he's really good offensively. He can use that to his advantage on offense, but he does give up some size. And Luke Garza at 6'11 is a guy who can score inside. He can take you outside and shoot threes, where he shoots about 34%. So he can do a lot of different things on the offensive end. And that's going to pose challenges for Jerron Davis too. You know, when you get him out there on the perimeter, how is Davis's mobility? So I think the health of both of Indiana's big guys is going to be really key. And if they're not 100%, we could really see that hurt the Hoosiers, because, you know, Davis, if his mobility is affected, Morgan, if his strength inside is affected, then Luke Garza is going to be able to kind of pick his spots between those two parts of the floor.
Yeah, it may be another game where you're going to need 8 really tough minutes out of Jake Forrester. Some tough minutes in the post, just kind of doing what the best you can with Evan Fitzner, Clifton Moore in there. It could end up being one of those games if it, like, let's just say Morgan couldn't go and Davis is still limited. Davis did look limited, but let's just say he's not at 100%.
Right.
You know, if you're dealing with a less than 100% Davis, no Morgan, you're going to need some of those bench bigs to step up, especially against a guy like Luka Garza, who's having a pretty good season.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting. You mentioned Jake Forrester. It's been kind of fascinating to see, like, the cycle of backup bigs this season, where it was Evan Fitzner at the start of the year, then they went to Clifton Moore for a few games there, and now it appears to be Forrester. I don't know who's going to get the nod in this game. My guess would be Forrester, but again, you just don't have a guy with the strength that you need, where that Deron Davis offers. And you know, Juwan Morgan has it, but if he's not healthy, then how does that shoulder hold up? I don't know. So my instinct is that Morgan will play. How limited he's going to be, how effective he'll be, I don't know. But I think in this game, it's a big game. They need this win. And, you know, all signs kind of pointed to him being all right after that Michigan State game. I think, you know, I didn't hear anything that suggested he might miss extended time. So I think he probably will play. But again, the effectiveness is the question.
Right. He may not miss extended time, but there's still you cannot count him in definitively. Yeah. Well, this is being recorded on Tuesday night, and there's a press conference tomorrow. We'll find out some more information then. But, you know, as of right now, we don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, the matchup that I'm kind of looking at is also in the front court. It's Justin Smith and Tyler Cook.
That's the other one.
Because Justin Smith has been awesome on defense this year. I think he's been Indiana's best defender.
Oh, yeah.
Their most important defender. I thought Michigan State was his best game as a help defender this season, because we've seen him matched up on a lot of these, you know, hyper-talented, you know, super-scoring, perimeter-oriented forwards. You know, the Lamar Stevens, the Jordan Juarez of the Big Ten. So he's
even
been...
Juarez, not in the Big Ten.
Well, sure, but, you know, of the stature. So he's been really good in those capacities, just those, you know, guarding on the ball, guarding in the post, those one-on-one matchups. But until last night, I didn't really see a whole lot of, you know, like, help side brilliance from him this season. I thought he was an okay help defender, but not great. In that Michigan State game, man, he was rotating really sharply. He was getting there for blocks. He was protecting the rim. He was drawing charges, bothering shots, even if he didn't block them. I thought he was really good in that capacity because Michigan State didn't have like that star big man. And now you go back to a role where Iowa does have that, you know, number one option scoring big guy at power forward, and you figure Justin Smith is going to have to get that matchup. Right. So he's kind of going back to that, you know, lock in one-on-one style of defense. And that's something I'm really excited to see, because we haven't really seen that from him in a long time, that specific type of matchup. And Tyler Cook is a really, really good player. He poses a unique challenge. And we've seen Justin Smith do a good job on these types of forwards before. But, you know, Cook is a little bit different animal, and Justin Smith is going to have a really, you know, tough matchup on his hands.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Justin Smith's exactly the guy you want on Tyler Cook if you're Indiana. I don't know that there's, anybody. There's definitely not anybody else on the team you'd want on Tyler Cook, and you saw that against Michigan State. You mentioned the blocks. I mean, he had like three blocks, I think, against Michigan State, and all of them were very crucial. I don't know if they ended up crediting that one at the very end with Cassius Winston, where he got kind of his fingernail.
And they were all help side blocks.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He was all coming from behind or just coming in on the help and was in perfect position. And it took him a little bit to get there to kind of get that timing down. But we really saw him excel in East Lansing at that.
Yeah, and like you said, he's basically the only guy on the roster that you'd really want defending Tyler Cook. And he's perfectly designed to do that. I mean, he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he's smart, he makes good reads on defense, just a good, intelligent player. So I'm just excited to watch that. I think that's going to be a really fun matchup to watch. In the front court, I think these teams kind of match up similarly, where they both play three guards, put some shooting on the floor. And that three-guard lineup for Indiana worked really well against Michigan State with Rob Phinisee, Devontae Green, Al Durham, and Romeo Langford. You know, pick any three of those guys on the floor together. They all looked really, really good. And with Phinisee in foul trouble, those minutes for Green were really key. And I thought Al Durham played his best game of the season.
I agree. Al Durham was so, so important. And he's really been emerging. He's emerged in through that losing streak. That was the one pot. He was the biggest positive that came out of that losing streak. Was Al Durham's growing into a leader now and just a more reliable player. And especially last year in the past, he was very inconsistent earlier in the season. Yeah. You know, he drew the starts after Zach McRoberts went down, but he was more a part of that third scoring committee, as we would say.
He was the first sub.
Right.
He
was one of several people that could become that third scoring option. But at this point, even if he's not going to be like the third highest scoring guy on the team every night, he's a guy who you can rely on with much more consistency than you could in the past.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think he'll probably draw the matchup on Isaiah Moss. And it's interesting because in many ways, Moss is kind of a similar player to Matt McQuaid of Michigan State. And I thought Durham did an awesome job on Matt McQuaid, denying him shots, not letting him get loose for three, you know, following off of screens, contesting, running off the line, closing out. Very Zach McRoberts-esque. Like, you take peak Zach McRoberts defensive effort running through screens and just apply it to what Al Durham did. I thought he was really good there. And so, you know, I don't know if Moss is going to, you know, be that quite that active off of the ball in terms of running off screens and having plays designed for him to get the ball. But Al Durham has proved at various points this season that he's capable of guarding those kind of lock, you know, those spot up shooters. He drew Ryan Klein for a lot of the Purdue game. So I think he's capable of doing that. And, you know, against another really good shooter, Isaiah Moss, who shoots 45% from three, you know, it's really important to have a guy like Al Durham who can just deny that guy shots, because, you know, if he gets five threes, you know, attempts in that game, he's going to make at least two or three of them. And so just denying that guy the ability to put points on the board is going to be really big.
Yeah, McQuaid was totally silent in that game against Indiana. Moss is coming off a pretty bad game. He was 0 for 7 in that Michigan game, only missed one three-pointer. So Michigan did something right there, but I mean, you can't point to that much that Michigan did right in that game. But Durham's defense has been impressive lately, just as well as the offense. And that matchup against Moss, and really, Moss isn't their only – Iowa's only, like, adept three-point shooter.
Oh, yeah.
They're
a lot of shooting.
Iowa's a three-point shooting team, and that's going to be a tough that's going to be difficult for Indiana.
Yeah.
Both on defense and offense, because if Iowa gets hot on from three-point range offensively, then Indiana's going to have to do the same offensively, and Michigan State is probably the only time this season that we've really seen them light it up from three like that.
Yeah, and that's where ball movement's going to be really key again, because that's what was contributing to those threes against Michigan State. They were moving the ball, they were reversing it, they were swinging the ball from side to side, getting multiple looks on the same possession, or at least running multiple actions in attempt to get a look, and kind of moving the defense with the ball and preventing it from being static and just loading up on Romeo Langford. So I think that's, you know, that's the one thing that I look at from that Michigan State game and say they have to carry that over, and I think they can. I think conceptually there are a lot of kind of philosophical things from the Michigan State game that even if you don't shoot 10 of 20 from three every game, even if you don't get 21 assists every game, I think the spirit, the discipline, the confidence, you know, just kind of the verve that they played with on offense is translatable moving forward. And they're going to need to have that against Iowa. Iowa's not a great defensive team anyway. So I think if you can move the ball against them and get them moving from side to side, you might have even more success scoring on Iowa than you did against Michigan State.
Yeah, that's very conceivable. I was, as we said before, I was the worst in the Big Ten in defensive efficiency. So based on that, the opportunities should be there for Indiana to at least try to open up some driving lanes for Romeo Langford.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, and then so I guess that's a good segue into Langford. I was kind of looking at him and Joe Wieskamp, that matchup on the wing. Both really talented star freshmen for their respective teams. You know, were it not for Romeo Langford and Ignas Brazdeikis for Michigan, Wieskamp might be in that freshman of the year discussion. He's been really, really solid, shooting 43% from three, and I think something like 58% from two. I mean, he's just been phenomenal. Averaging 11 points, 5 rebounds, about 1 assist. So he can do it in a variety of different ways. And Iowa's not quite as reliant on him as Indiana is on Romeo Langford. So you're going to see a little bit different style of usage in this game. But I think those two are probably going to match up against one another, at least at certain points. And for Romeo Langford, that's going to be a challenge defensively, because I think he prefers to guard guys on the ball, you know, guard kind of the primary scorer, so we can just lock in on his guy, like we were talking about with Justin Smith. Just lock in on his guy, pay attention to that individual matchup rather than, you know, act as a help defender and kind of guard these off-ball threats. I think Al Durham is better suited to guard a guy like Matt McQuaid, who's going to run around a bunch of screens, and Romeo Langford is a little bit better against guys who have the ball in their hands. And so you know, frankly, I haven't seen quite enough of Iowa this season to know how much Wieskamp works with the ball in his hands versus off. But that's going to be difficult for Romeo if for no other reason, he's going to have to expend a lot of energy on the defensive end. And so how does that affect him on offense? Is he able to carry that same load when he's not able to kind of, I don't want to say hide on a non-threat, yeah. but, you know, can you kind of put him on the weakest link on the perimeter and let the other guards kind of do the heavy lifting defensively?
Yeah, that's certainly something to consider, especially if Juwan Morgan's out offensively, then you're going to need even more from Romeo Langford than you would if Morgan was in there. But as far as Wieskamp goes, I guess sticking with Langford, you mentioned the help defense. As much improved as he's been as a defender since the beginning of the season, and he is. He's very much improved since the beginning of the season. He still is not quite there in the help defense role. Right. Like we mentioned, Justin Smith took those steps forward as the help defender. Romeo's not quite there yet, which could make this matchup a little bit interesting.
What about this idea that, you know, I don't want to call it like the Ewing theory. I don't want to say that the Hoosiers are better without Juwan Morgan. But what about this idea that his absence was maybe the reason that the ball moved as much as it did against Michigan State? I don't know if that's true or not. I asked Archie Miller about that in the postgame presser, if, you know, not having him kind of forced the team into having to move the ball because they just didn't really have any other options. I wonder if that's true or not. I don't know. But I do think that the ball seemed to move a little bit better when they didn't have that anchor to rely on in Juwan Morgan. And then if that is true, how do you kind of marry the two concepts of getting the ball to your best player and letting him do his thing, but also keeping that ball movement, that continuity in the offense? That's going to be, you know, if Morgan is able to return, kind of go back to that primary scoring role, that's going to be an interesting balance for the Hoosiers to strike.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would probably lean towards your question whether Morgan directly impacted that, because going into the game, that was something that Archie Miller was saying they needed to improve on. They needed to get the ball movement working. He was saying that going into the game, and I don't think the ball movement was bad when Morgan was in there against Michigan State. I think the ball movement was significantly improved for the entire game, even with Morgan in there in the first half. So I think it's less the question of is Morgan going to be able to play or not, and how's that going to affect that, at least with what we're talking about now. I think it's more of, can they carry over the good things that they did against Michigan State into this game against Iowa?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I'm not necessarily arguing that they were better without Juwan Morgan or that the offense moved because of his absence, but I think it is an interesting coincidence at the very least.
Yeah.
Let's kind of, you know, wrap things up here, I guess, or unless you have any other main points, but I'll just ask you, Indiana wins this game against Iowa if they do what?
If they can hit threes, not to say that they need to shoot 50% again, but they can't be shooting like 25% on three and expect to win this game against a high scoring team like Iowa. I mean, they're going to need to shoot probably at least like 35% from three and not missing like 35% at not like a ridiculously high number of shots. And the more shots they take, the more they're going to need to make. That sounds very simplistic, but you know what I mean.
No, I do. And I would point to the other end of the floor as well, saying that because Iowa is such a good three-point shooting team, I think you got to take away what they want to do, because Jordan Bohannon, Isaiah Moss, Joe Wieskamp, Luke Garza, really Tyler Cook is the only non-shooter in that starting lineup, and they bring shooting off the bench. They have all these different options. That's one thing I talked about with Jared today was, what made Indiana so effective partly was that they had multiple guys. They could put multiple guys on the floor at once who were knocking down shots, right? And that changes your offense so much. It's so different than when you just have one guy, maybe two, that can actually hit a three. When you have three, four, maybe even five guys on the floor at once who can actually score the ball and make shots, it makes you so much harder for a defense to guard. And that sounds, again, sounds obvious, but just having those multiple threats. And I think that's what that's the challenge they pose, is they have Tyler Cook, this guy who can score from the post, go inside, get a bucket when he wants to, but he also has all these different options to spray the ball out to, and a great big man partner in Luke Garza. So there's just a lot of different holes that you have to patch. And so I don't even know if Michigan State, you know, had that many capable guys on off. I think you could argue that Michigan State had at least one relatively weak link on the floor at all times, on offense at least. And so Iowa is kind of the exact opposite, where they have no weak links on offense, lots of weak links on defense.
Yeah.
And so can you take advantage of that, and yeah. can you make them pay for that? One other theory I want to float out there on the shooting. I talked to you and Cameron Drummond about this while we were down on the floor after the game. I think the rims and the ball are part of the reason why Indiana shot so well. I know the ball movement was great. I know that the offense looked good and they were getting open shots. But they've gotten open shots in Assembly Hall. They've gotten open shots in other venues. And I got to say, being down there on the court and just seeing the rim up close, seeing the ball up close, this sounds crazy to anyone, you know, who hasn't, I guess, played basketball. But, like, it was different. The rims at the Breslin Center are different from the rims at Assembly Hall. The balls, obviously, are different because they use two different sponsorship companies. I think that played a role. And you can disagree with me, but you'll never change my mind. I will believe that, you know, until I die, that the ball and rim combination is a serious difference maker in college basketball. That's why I don't think you see as much variance in the NBA in shooting, because everything is regulated. It's all standard.
Yeah.
And in college basketball, it's just different from venue to venue, whether it be the balls, the rims, you know, the court. Obviously, the environment is different. But I really do think that played a factor. And so I'm interested to see if they get the same looks that they got in the Breslin Center. Can they knock down those same shots in Assembly Hall? I'm not convinced that they can.
Well, I have no counter to that theory. I mean, I was not intently watching the rim and the ball after the game.
I'm telling you, there was something there. There's something to this.
Well, I should say I was intently watching the rim and the ball, but I was not intently trying to spot the differences right. between that rim and that ball and sure. other rims and other balls. One other point I will make to your previous question of Indiana wins this game if they'll win this game if they can get another good game out off the bench, because yeah. that was such a big factor of that 7-game losing streak, and it was so clear how much better the bench was when they got Devontae Green back, when they got Deron Davis back. I mean, even beyond them, like we mentioned, they got some quality minutes out of Jake Forrester.
Yep.
Evan Fitzner gave them something, which is better than the nothing that he's had in some other games. And you can get some when you can get production from those guys off the bench. It just makes winning so much easier.
Yeah, just having replacement level guys on your bench is huge. And Indiana hasn't had many of those. You know, no offense to Jake Forrester and Clifton Moore and Evan Fitzner, but those guys have been negative players for most of the season, and that's kind of who they are. And the plan was not really for them to play major minutes at the start of the season, but Indiana's hand is kind of enforced. And so, you know, Archie Miller's done what he can, but you just don't really have that many options. So I agree that having Green and Finney back, or I should say Green and Deron Davis back, was really big, because not only did they play well, but I think you can count on them at least giving you something in pretty much every game. You know, you're not going to have to worry about, you know, can we survive with these two guys on the floor? I think the answer is pretty definitively yes to that
yeah.
question. So to kind of flip this thing around, Indiana loses if what? I guess just the opposite of what you said, or is there something kind of bigger there?
I think Indiana loses if they, well, it's going to sound obvious, obviously, but if they get away from what they were doing well against Michigan State, if they are unable to stop Iowa from lighting it up from the 3-point line, and if they're not able to get Romeo Langford going, because yeah. even if it takes Romeo Langford a while to get going, like it did, he was in single digits at halftime
yeah.
and was not really productive in the first half, but he turned it on late in the game. And if you're not at any point able to, Romeo's had a few rough games where he's just not been a factor in any game, and Indiana is not going to have a prayer in this game if they can't get something from Romeo Langford.
Yeah, I agree. I think you got to carry the connectedness, the togetherness from both ends of the floor, carry that through, not just to the Iowa game, but I think, you know, use that as a building block and kind of a momentum builder for the rest of the season.
And even in the mentality too. I mean, clearly they kind of rallied
yeah.
around Juwan Morgan going down, and Deron Davis after the game was talking like, no one's given us any respect. I don't think people respect us in this league. We're out to prove everybody wrong. And that's the type of mentality they're going to need to take into the rest of the season. And this is the first test of, will they really be able to keep that going?
They should call him DeRodney Dangerfield.
DeRodney Dangerfield.
Is that the guy who says, I don't get no respect? Isn't that him?
I
think that's him. if not, then I've been made to look a fool. Yeah, no, I agree with you. What, final question before we get out of here. who wins and why? All right, maybe not why, but just who wins, how much, kind of basic predictions for the game. I can go first if you need to.
You go first.
I'll say that Indiana wins because Iowa does not have a great defense, and I know that Indiana's been struggling, but I don't think that a team – I don't think that Iowa's going to be able to stop Indiana if IU looks anything like the team that played against Michigan State on Saturday. And I expect that they will be, maybe 70% of that team. And I just don't think Iowa can stop them on defense. Now, the counter to that would be that Iowa could just outscore them. But I think that the Hoosiers are uniquely suited to guard Iowa because they have Justin Smith. I think that Smith-Tyler Cook matchup is huge. I think if he can just make things difficult for Tyler Cook, and I think he can, and kind of take away what he wants to do on offense, I think that puts you in pretty good position. And the Hawkeyes have different guys that can beat you, but I think if you can kind of cut off the head of the snake, and Justin Smith has proven that he can do that time and again this season, I think they have kind of that card up their sleeve that not many other teams in the Big Ten can play.
All right. I think I'm going to pick Iowa to win this game because I think it's going to be a close game either way, and it would not surprise me.
Why do you hate Indiana?
I don't. I really went back and forth on this because I think you did see a clear shift in mentality from Indiana on Saturday. The thing is that we haven't even mentioned on this podcast is that Michigan State would have won that game if Nick Ward could hit some free throws.
Yes, that's
and
true.
I don't think they're going to get breaks at the free throw line like that from Iowa, and I don't know if Indiana is going to be able to win a free throw battle.
That's a good point, especially against Iowa, one of the best shooting teams in the, not just the Big Ten, but the country. They shoot 75% from the free throw line. That's, I think, top 40 or 50 in the NCAA. So, yeah. No, I agree with that. Although I think there is something to be said for the strategic value of putting Nick Ward at the line. I think part of that might have been, you're not going to be quite as liberal fouling, a guy like Luke Garza as you would be with Nick Ward. But yes, point taken. I think
granted, I think it's not like Jake Forrester was really intentionally fouling Nick Ward in that sense. I think he was just fouling.
Forrester had no choice. That is true. I think it's going to be a really exciting game. I think, again, both teams kind of, they have something to prove. I think they're coming off of really big, potentially momentum-building games. And, that's meaningful. That's something that I think both teams kind of feel like their season is not necessarily on the line, but in some ways it kind of is. Both teams are kind of, they've hit some rough patches. They're kind of trying to right the ship here. They're both coming off big wins, and this game represents a big opportunity to kind of steer things back in the right direction. You and I will both be at the game.
Yeah.
I will be on the play-by-play for WIUX.
I was going to ask because I could see your spotting
board. Yep, got a spotting board here. Not quite complete, but it will be by Thursday night. So you can listen there if, for whatever reason, you don't want to listen to Don Fisher. I will be providing the alternative broadcast, you could say, on WIUX 99.1. If you're in Bloomington, WIUX.org/stream. If you're not, follow both of us on Twitter at BLadner, at Seth Tau. We have stuff going up on InsideTheHall.com
regularly,
assembly call regularly.
Subscribe to the email list to get our reaction and analysis after the morning after every game.
Yep. I will have that email on Friday morning. You will be on the notebook for that game. And it's going to be a fun one. I can't wait to be back in Assembly Hall. It always feels like every time I go back there after an away game, it feels like it's been a month since I've been in the building. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I know you are. I know our listeners are as well. So until next time, we'll talk to you all later.
If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU Hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.